The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
Let's talk about healthcare benefits. As a physical therapist out here in California, some of my patients do actually have the opportunity to use their insurance, but because I am an out-of-network or cash pay provider, it gets a little confusing and lost in translation when trying to communicate it with the people that I'm working with. If you are out of state, listeners out can work with you, but it would just be more on an out-of-pocket basis rather than billing our insurance. But what does this all mean? What is this insurance? In a few weeks, we are actually going to be having open enrollment for folks who are working in companies. And what are some of those questions that we need to answer before we either stick with the current healthcare plan that we have or the change that we need to make moving forward in regards to our healthcare future? And today I have Nico Kapitis, who is a healthcare benefit specialist and actually helps with small and medium groups in regards to their insurance plans. And he was kind enough today to actually explain a little bit more about healthcare plans and how to use them and just get a better understanding of going. So Nico, it's great to see you. Thank you for being on today's episode.
Ashton, thanks for having me on. It's an exciting time to be in the industry. A lot of questions coming down the pike and happy to be here.
Yeah, and there's always a lot changing happening. And I know that especially when it comes to even this like this upcoming election, healthcare has been a huge part of it, right? So we're not going to go into the politics of healthcare because that's like an entirely different discussion there. But we're going to go into the nitty gritty of just understanding healthcare plans because I even know myself, I am the prime decision maker when it comes to figuring out what healthcare plans my wife and I go through and then to be our baby girl. And even for myself, pretty educated in the industry, it is always pretty hard, even for me, to just try to figure out what's going to be the best plan for just trying to understand what those benefits are. So before we go into the nitty-gritty about health plans, insurance, what that is, tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Sure. Yeah. Happy to. So I have been a health and welfare consultant, i.e. employee benefits broker for 16 years now. 12 of those have been on my own and really kind of self-studied and went deep into the field of self-funding and learning, you know, tactics within that area and being able to deploy them into smaller groups I've found to be very intriguing. But that has been my background. So serving retail clients, you know, through an insurance brokerage model and being their broker, right? Representing the market on their behalf, taking their you know program to bid, learning what their needs are, making sure we zero in on compliance and education and doing things the right way, mission-wise for the company. So that was an interesting ride. I will say, Ashley, for the last 4 years, since I had started to do this directly with clients, I actually started to build custom health plans and custom health plan portfolios for other brokers to sell to their downstream clients. So I have two separate organizations, both of which do very similar things. One is as a retail broker where I service clients directly, right? And that's the mission. The other one is where I work as basically a program architect or a general agent, and I work in partnership with other brokers to help their downstream clients. So it's provided me with a couple of useful and interesting lenses through which to look upon this industry because I've now seen so many sides that mostly brokers don't know how health plans are built, and mostly people that assemble health plans don't really truly know the you know, in the trenches view of brokers, clients, employees, challenges, like how things are actually deployed in the market, working with providers like yourself, how easy is this going to be to use? You know, so it's been an interesting deep dive. And honestly, I just nerd out on all this stuff and it is intensely interesting. So it doesn't seem like work to find these kinds of answers that we'll run through and then maybe go even in more depth too. So that's been about me, but you know, just like you mentioned, congrats on your girl to be. I have three daughters myself, been married 10 years, couple golden retrievers, just trying to keep the wheels on the bus at all times, but having a good time with it. So
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that story. It's good. I'm very glad. one of the platforms that I'm a huge fan of using, especially getting connected with professionals like yourself, is through LinkedIn. So I'm really appreciative that I'm active and saw all the content, the things that you're doing. So I thought that you'd be the person to actually interview today to actually talk all about it. Now, I think one of the challenges that like the majority of us Americans, specifically in America, we have health insurance. It was kind of like this thing that I know in the early 90s, it was like something along the lines of like you work for a big corporation, you have health insurance. And then it became like a really big talk amongst like political acts. And I think it was like in 2012, when it was like, okay, everyone's going to have health insurance. And one of the things I found to be very confusing was the fact that, okay, everyone has health insurance from a provider standpoint, like that from a provider standpoint, the insurance pays us, but then also what that mean for the patients themselves. So before we talk about like in-network, out-of-network and all that stuff, tell us a little bit more like health benefits in general. Like what are they? Because I think people aren't 100% clear on what those benefits are and how do they end up started in the first place?
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. And I actually have a little bit of a background to share on it. So employer group plans started, I believe it was World War II era, where there was some tax benefit advantage to having employers provide, you know, a level of health insurance. And obviously back in the day, even notwithstanding inflation and dollars just being different for services, I mean, obviously things have ballooned out. So in various different points in, you know, the past decades, health insurance has been increasingly under a tighter and tighter look and microscope, and for good reason, right? I mean, things just continue to spiral out of control. But the genesis of it in the beginning was that employers were given an advantage financially and tax-wise to be able to provide insurance on a group basis, right? And that's what started, you know, more than half a century ago at this point. Several different iterations and changes happened along the course of that journey where, you know, for example, networks became established, right? And then providers got to be becoming a part of a preferred provider organization, right? And then there was the HMO model where it was, you know, gatekeeper and then access to care. Fundamentally not a bad model, but people wanted choice, right? So then PPOs and EPOs and point of services and, you know, insert your acronym in terms of what these networks mean, just started to continue to expand and expand even further. When CPT codes were standardized, the dollars even more became augmented because there was a centralized, you know, repository that housed all the CPT codes. So if something didn't have a CPT code, basically someone couldn't get paid for doing that service anymore. So it'd be like diagnosing low back pain, right? Like something you talk about every day. It's like, there's not a code for that. So how are we going to charge for that? Well, you know what? We can't. So we won't really address it, which is sad. But that's, again, when something gets to be as enormous as what the healthcare and health insurance complex and machine is, it is exceedingly difficult to change. But it's these various things over the years that have happened. And you mentioned, you know, 2008, you know, when the ACA was passed, that was a huge change, especially for small businesses. It did put actually a lot of confusion into people's minds, even to this day, where, you know, are pre-X, do they matter or not, right? With this kind of plan, why are we still having to disclose health information to see if we can get better rates and underwriting when I thought the law was that no one could think about that? So there's so much more nuance than the average consumer knows. And that is why it's important to have a knowledgeable broker consultant if you're an employer, you know, that does have the level of background and expertise and depth to be able to navigate these challenges with you on behalf of your employees. But you're right. It's just a problem that continues to balloon. And a lot of people don't know why. Why is insurance even tied to the employer? Even if it wasn't, the thing to still focus upon is not how it's financed. It's how to actually control the costs and care for the human beings. And that can be oftentimes just skirted right over, right? It's like, what deductible do we want quoted? $3,000. That's what we have now. We'll look at the standard markets like we do every year. The costs are going to continue to go up. And no one ever, it seems no one ever. That's a dangerous blanket statement, right? So I'll avoid those. But not too many folks pause and think critically, like, what do our staff want? You know, what are the challenges? Like, are people going to out-of-network doctors? Like, would they rather have a primary care home where they can get in at the same day, right? Do we even need an insurance network? Or maybe we can have a concierge within our plan to help make appointments for people. And then providers like yourselves get paid directly, you know, from the employer's plan without dealing with an insurance network at all. So there's so many innovations and ways to tackle the problem. But I think most people just kind of sit and they're like, it's a huge problem. Insurance is expensive. And then you only hear about it when it doesn't work well, not the other 90 something times, you know, that it does go perfectly well. It's always just kind of the redheaded stepchild of a problem. You know, it's just, I hate to use that term, but it is. Every time you hear about it, it's like nothing is going well, but there are some solutions. But that's why we're in this fix, right? It's because something had a tax advantage that it ballooned out, and then really, really smart and even larger organizations got involved. And then they created a huge complex that at this point, it just seems like such a big problem and a costly one. Most people don't know where to look for a solution. So hopefully the background helps as to why we have employer-sponsored health insurance, but that's not where the dialogue ends, right? Because now we have to figure out how to tame the beast. And this is where, you know, folks like myself and my colleagues and people in Health Rosetta, Free Market Medical Association, like two very big national organizations that have folks committed to fixing healthcare.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery, and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit ptpatientadvocate.com and book your free call with our experts.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And thank you so much for sharing that. And I like how you use taming the beast. Unfortunately, in that we is a term that we have to use because it's kind of the scenario. But let's talk about that beast in more kind of simplistic terms. So for the listeners out there, like right now, and this is my perception of insurance or like how it is all going on. It was interesting. I'm glad that you talked about the history of like health, employee provided health insurance as well. Cause I was reading this book. It was called American Sickness.
Elizabeth Rosenthal.
Great book. Fantastic book. And so from there, just kind of like reading, just get a better understanding, because I know even a provider. And one of the many reasons that why I stepped out of the insurance networks as a provider was the fact that I was like, I know that insurance are actually paying me a lot less to take care of the patients that I need to. And for the longest time, I literally was just like, oh my gosh, insurance is bad. But then I would say that, but also use my own health insurance to, you know, get the healthcare that we need. So I said, I need to get a better understanding. And so throughout investigations, pretty much like the primary, like simplistic breakdown of the way insurance is that it's a group of people pretty much put their money together, and that money is held by the insurance company. And the insurance company, the way that they usually or used to make money was if they would take money, they would invest it, and they would get the interest and whatever, right? But then they were kind of like the gatekeepers on paying. So if we were to look at the overall life cycle from the moment that a person contributes to their insurance plan, it's like, okay, I, consumer, will put money into the insurance account, and then I go to a doctor, a physical therapist, like a provider who's actually in network, and then that doctor and provider actually gets paid collectively from that bank account. And then over time, as the complexities start to evolve, that's when we know that the insurance company start to be a little bit more selective in regards to who they'll reimburse, but then also how much they're reimbursing or how much they're paying. Does that sound about right?
It does. And that's inherently why it's so confusing too, is there's just so many different levels of middlemen and people involved. You know, when Change Healthcare was hacked in February, and then again, a couple of months later, you know, millions and millions, tens of millions of people had their data compromised. Right. And no one even knew who Change Healthcare was, unless they were like in the know in the industry. Right. Maybe their provider, a health plan system that had worked with them, but the common, you know, insured member had no idea there's even some stats actually that are interesting. I think it's 27 cents on every dollar is spent on overhead and administration. And that's not, you know, necessarily only tied to the health plan. I mean, how many vendors with whom they work within the stack of the health plan are paid, like a Change Healthcare, right? Like a pharmacy rebate aggregator, right? These are not even the people that are directly providing the service. They're just literally layers of entities and organizations that help to facilitate the process, but that's not to say that's the only process. So you're right, you know, especially smaller groups, like they have just been twisting because they don't even know where their money is going. If they pay a small group of, say, 30 people, right, in Oklahoma, you know, they pay their premium to Blue Cross and, you know, they get no claims data. They get no reporting back. It's not, hey, you paid us $30,000. You had a $40,000 claim month, actually. So that's heavy. And we need to make up for that at the renewal. You know, most states, for especially small employers that are below that 50 mark, in other states and districts, it's a different level. But if you're an employer under 50, unless you live in one of the pockets of the country where actually data is shared, and sometimes it's shared in a very limited scope, right? So it's really inactionable. You have no idea. And if you don't have ideas as to how to measure something, you cannot manage it at all. And it's so confusing to begin with. It's like, what's my insurance card say? What's my copay? Oh, I got a bill. It doesn't really sync up with my explanation of benefits I pulled online. Most people don't even seem to register for their, you know, member portals to gain an understanding, which they absolutely should. And people just, you know, they're indebted to pay. They're just like, I'm the patient. I signed the forms. I got a bill. Probably it was processed properly with my insurance, but maybe, maybe not. And then on the provider side, you're right. You know, first of all, it's confusing. Second of all, you think that you're, you know, partnering with carriers and networks, but are you getting paid, you know, for your time and services to the commensurate degree that you should, right? And are you getting paid as much as they would purport you are paid, right? And so those numbers can be very, very different when you look and see. And so there's a lot of confusion and mismatch and misalignment of especially incentives amongst all parties. And I went on such a tear, I forgot where we even had the question begin, but that's basically right. You know, you pay money and the insurance company is obligated to administer basically your money and to buy some insurance with that and to pay for some admin with that and, you know, to fund claims. But what those claims are and how much money is going into the various buckets, employers can find out what those numbers are. They just have to talk to a consultant that knows how to find and unpack those numbers and basically assemble a better deal for them if that can be had and keep it a little bit more complex in the surface level, right? It's like, let's take a look a little bit deeper so you understand what you have and you understand how to fix it, right? And the care journey problem that the members may have, or the out-of-network problem that, you know, has seemed to be an issue forever for mental health or for, you know, other kinds of therapists or radiologists, anesthesiologists that accept no insurance and like balance bills just are always something to work through, right? So there's so much to it. And I would encourage people to just learn more, you know, talk to people who have subject matter expertise and just see where the dialogue goes. And it's going to be eye-opening, I guarantee it.
My eyes have certainly been open, just trying to get better of this, right, through self-research and communicating with people like yourself. So let's, over the past, we'll say 10 to 15 minutes, we talked about, you brought up the concept of networks, right? And so most of the listeners have probably heard in network, out of network. A lot of times they're not really quite sure what that is. They just know that when they go out of network, they have to pay a lot more money. So tell us a little bit more about this, the concept or principles of in-network versus out-of-network differences.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So again, you know, decades ago, the preferred provider organization was set up. And so that would mean that if someone was in that PPO network, then that you got better pricing, right? You got to use the insurance. You had your copay assigned, right? If you went to someone out of the network, obviously, you're basically stuck with out-of-network benefits, which is typically like double the in-network deductible amount, and you don't really get a benefit of having the insurance negotiate a discount, right? Sometimes that can matter, sometimes it can't, but I'll go into it. So basically they said, we want these PPO networks to be you know, exclusive to our health plan. But then over the years, every single health plan got that same idea. And every provider said, well, I want access to patients. Like if Aetna's in my market or Cigna's in my market, I need to pretty well be in their network because they're insuring a lot of people. And if I'm not, I'm going to miss out on that, you know, business opportunity, that, you know, patient base, that, you know, faction of people that are actually paying customers that have insurance that, you know, dictates that I'm going to get paid if they come see me, right? How much, who knows? But that was the deal, right? It's like, hey, we'll arrange a payment with you as a provider. You're going to become part of our network. What we're going to provide is access to human beings that have insurance. And then if, when they see you, you know, you're going to get paid something, right? And we're going to pre-negotiate what that amount is. Obviously, it's so much more complex in terms of, you know, rev cycle management and hiring a consultant to help you with cash flow and taking a look at what you're actually getting paid versus what the contracts read and so forth. So it's just so confusing that so many providers just said, I just want to be in like almost every network, right? And if you look around or you ask any provider that takes insurance regularly, what networks are you in? And chances are they're in almost every single one they can afford to be in, right? Not only to have access to the populations, but also maybe they were sold on the fact that First Health is all over the place, right? And they really need to be in that network too. So networks provide a little bit of good and bad. The problem, Ashley, is that once PPOs got so big, it's undifferentiated, right? It's like, what's preferred about a provider that is in 18 other networks, you know, with all these other different insurance plans, like what makes them preferred, right? Because by definition, you'd have to be preferred over someone else or over another entity or person or organization, right? But there's nothing preferred if everyone has it, right? It's like, I'm preferred because I have two limbs right here. You know, everybody does have that. So it's not a uniqueness. So insurance networks now, I mean, they're so vast. And the question becomes like, that means everybody can go to basically every one. How much control do you have over an ecosystem where everybody can go to every single one and you don't have access to the data? That's one of the reasons why we're in this problem, right? It's like the spending is going out of control, right? People are getting advice from any level of provider, right? Any sort of provider that's in the PPO networks, which now we know is like pretty much everybody, you know, for the most part, just depending upon the service that's provided. And when you really think about it, you're like, I don't know. I'd rather have someone that has like a really good doctor that knows the local people that they would send them to if they have a catastrophic or a non-communicable disease, something chronic that needs management, right? Like they would know who the best endocrinologist is to send someone to, the best orthopedic surgeon, the best physical therapist, you know, the best, you know, insert your specialty, right? And so they would already know. So do you need a network that has 120,000 physicians nationally for your group of 50 people, 80 people, 800 people that all live in one place, let's just say? Or would you rather say, like, we're just going to control the ecosystem a little differently? Like, we're going to make sure everybody has a good medical home. We're going to make sure that said medical home providers understand our insurance plan. And when they have to make a referral, it looks like this, instead of just having the member say, here's my card, specialist, like Dr. Jones told me to come see you, right? So there's different ways to engineer it where you don't need vast national networks. You end up needing just good healthcare and maybe hyper local healthcare so you can save money and remove middlemen. So that's how networks started. That's the state of them now. The way of the future is more, I think, direct contracts with facilities. So large employers can enter into these direct contracts that basically says, hey, hospital and hospital system, you know, they've negotiated an offer directly with the employer or with the broker consultant, you know, person who builds the health plans, with an intermediary party that does this for a living. They make direct contracts with hospitals that pay the hospitals quickly, right, at a fair reimbursement rate, but there's not a network involved. So you remove that administrative layer and fluff, and it's actually a lot cleaner. So I think personally that that's the way of the future is direct contracts, direct payments, you know, using new technologies that can tie into the employer's health plan. It requires a little extra thinking to imagine a plan that would work in that manner, but that's where a lot of forward-leaning brokers are looking. They're saying, hey, what is more efficient? Like cash payment, get paid same day provider, don't wait 2 weeks. I know you think that's fast relative to 3 months or a year, but why not same day? Like, don't you want the money in your account? And so these are the kinds of dialogues that more employers should listen to and try to adopt into, because people are hurting. I mean, $1,000 a month employee only premiums, like that's where we are. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. Just watching for us, just trying to pick health plans, it ends up becoming very confusing. So I really appreciate you sharing the concept, like what networks are, but then showing the evolution throughout the years and decades. I think what's particularly interesting is the fact that, and I even know for myself, as we're trying to figure out doctors and everything like that, one of the first questions is, are they in network with our insurance? And like, what does that mean? And so to be able to get a better understanding of that allows us to a couple of different things. One, it allows us to make a much more informed decision, because we can say, well, all right, well, if they're in our network, what's the quality we're dealing with? And it's a whole discussion on the quality of care that you're going to get in network versus out of network. But trying to get a better understanding of, like, how do you choose your doctor in the first place? Do you choose your doctor based on, there's some folks who are going to just go straight to their insurance website, which is on my network. There's going to be another group of people who are going to go in and say, all right, well, who are the physical therapists? Who are the doctors in my area? Okay, will they take our insurance? If they take our insurance, like, great, we'll continue. What happens if they don't take our insurance, right? Is this something that, knowing their reputation, are we willing to actually pay a little extra to get that care? And why is that person out of network in the first place? And it kind of goes through this whole cascade of questions, which then leads us to another piece, like in regards to cost. One of the most common terms that we'll see is the deductible, right? And I know for our benefits, and I'll just speak for our benefits, we have a deductible for both our in-network benefits, but also a deductible for our out-of-network benefits. And shared a little bit more, or could you share a little bit more about like what that deductible is? What does it mean? Why do we have it in the first place?
Sure. So the deductible is the initial amount for...
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Certain services, if you receive them, that is the obligation of the employee to meet prior to the plan, you know, paying out or satisfying part of those charges, right? So the deductible is there as, presumably it started as just a cost share, right? Just like a small hurdle. Like, we don't want people just going to get, ad nauseum tests every single day or services that they don't need. And that leads to overutilization, which leads to higher costs, which leads to higher renewals and the rest. So, you know, a deductible, mostly it's for those larger, you know, non-copay level services that people may need. Health plans over the years actually have again, they've just transformed. They've continued to do so where there used to be what's called an all-inclusive office visit copay that would include, you know, in-office surgeries, the consultation, you know, the exam, imaging, x-rays, blood work, anything that they would do while you're in the office, right? That would be covered by the $10 copay, right? When the ACA was passed, people started to fragment, you know, the benefits off a little bit. It was, you know, well, the office visit copay only satisfies the office visit charge. So maybe that's a $120 charge, right? And you paid 20 bucks and we paid, you know, the rest of the negotiated cost. Maybe it's 60 bucks from the insurance plan. On the other side of it, you know, is the deductible for the larger services, right? And so, but they started to parse off like, all right, lab work and x-rays and the rest that used to be under the office visit copay, now that's deductible coinsurance, right? So what's ended up happening over the years is like more and more has been shifted onto the back of the employee or the insured member. And what that obviously does is it alleviates some of the pressure from the carrier to pay as quickly. But that doesn't address the fact that people are still just being crushed. And like a lot of people are what's called functionally uninsured, which is not my term, but I love to use it because if their deductible is so high, they don't have the money anyway to satisfy the deductible if they needed to go to the hospital or have, you know, a new major illness or whatever the case may be, right? Maybe they just need lab work to monitor their diabetes, right, every few months. I mean, it could be something as basic as that. And the fact that they have to meet their deductible or pay out of pocket at all, that just dissuades them from going to get care. So things, you know, can balloon and become worse and fester, and then you're even sicker than before. So the deductible by design was to have some cost share to the members. As you can see now, with every single year, the deductible and the out-of-pocket max is legally allowed to creep up. And so now I think the highest one in 2025, I haven't looked at it just yet, but, you know, more than $9,000 a year for the individual. It is insane how much money that is. And then, you know, you and I each have families. You know, what's the family? Two times the individual level, right? Sometimes three times, depending upon the area and the type of plan. I mean, three times nine is $27,000 in network. You know, that is insane. So it becomes, you know, incumbent upon us, brokers, consultants, employers, to have vehicles built within the plan that help to offset that deductible exposure. Because at some point, you know, the premiums are runaway in terms of how much they cost. And the out-of-pocket, you know, if an employee's making 30 grand a year and they have a $9,000 deductible, things do not compute, right? Something has to give somewhere. So that's why they have it, but that's in practice how it looks today, which is a little bit of a grim picture, but that's why folks like us and the ecosystems I'm a part of have such a huge mission. It's like, we're just trying to fix the things that are inherently wrong, obviously wrong with healthcare, but that's the long answer to what a deductible is and kind of how that interplays with the whole thing.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And so it's a way for the insurance companies to actually kind of, I think you said it was manage the cost and the responsibility and having it so that folks end up, like if they want to go through the out-of-network route or go through like various different procedures, they take on the risk. But you're absolutely right. It is quite, I like to say unfair that we're paying so much money into this account, yet we still have to pay a lot on top of it. Now, let's talk briefly about just the concept of choice between providers. Now, for me out here in California, I'm a now network provider, which in essence, patients actually would pay me out of pocket initially, and then I send them a super bill, which then gets processed. That's one route. There are other out of network providers who will actually bill insurance companies, and then based off of that, they'll actually bill the patient as well. I know for me, if I'm going through looking for medical services, as I was saying, I was like, okay, well, are they going to be in network or out of network for me? And then if they are still happen to be out of network, have a really good reputation, and something that I'm thinking, all right, well, let me just go ahead and go through this route. It's probably going to be a lot easier. From your experience interacting with clients or just people in general, or even for yourself, there's been a lot of patients and providers who are actually choosing both either the cash route or the out-of-network route as well. And so I've seen this as a shift. What are some of the reasons to why people are doing that, or providers as well, from your standpoint?
Yeah, I love the movement. And I love that people are now being made aware that there's a choice, right? And that's the thing. It's like before you'd be like, all right, I'm at this car dealership, I have to choose between what they have, right? That's my insurance network. Now people are like, what kind of car do I want? Like, right? Like, I don't care if it's at this dealership or not. Like, I have good money to pay. I need something. I need a service. I need a product, right? Isn't that how it should work, right? With every single decision, you know, there's like a decision matrix, right, that comes into play. And people need to start applying that to what services they need. Like, if I need, you know, mental health counseling, for example, and, you know, behavioral health providers are one of those that, you know, they can afford to not have a lot of insurance networks. And so, you know, if I'm the patient that needs a service, what'll I do? I'll say, okay, well, I'm going to try to either research or find a good doctor or go to whatever source that I believe, or maybe my neighbors, I'm going to ask around. I'm going to ask my GP. I'm going to ask some other, you know, providers in the area who I should talk to, maybe if I'm comfortable with that. And I want to find out, you know, who I go to. Once I find out the service that I need and then who can provide it and who I actually want to go to, then I can look at the plan and say, like, okay, are they out of network or are they in, right? It's a bonus if they're in network because you've chosen the right kind of provider for you in your scenario. And the service, you know, if it's in network, again, that's a bonus. If it's out of network, you need to say, well, all right, well, let's ask them, like, what is their non-insurance price? Like, what is their direct payment? What is their cash payment? What is their same day payment? Whatever they want to call it, right? Self-pay rate. And, you know, compare that, say, like, if someone's out of network and it is self-pay, right, maybe I have to pay $60 for that session or $80 for that session, or maybe it's $120, whatever it is, right? If it's worth it to me, I'm going to get it, right? Or if I use my insurance, I'd have to go to either a different provider, right? And maybe it's a lower copay, but maybe I'm not satisfied with that choice and I'd rather just continue to go out of network. So I think that people always just need to make the decision, like, what service do I need, right? Do I have to use my insurance or not? Like, let me actually make a decision tree here and say, if my insurance, I use it, what's my cost potentially going to be in terms of my exposure? Which nowadays, it's honestly, there's cost estimate calculators online on many of these health insurance carrier portals. So you can actually get some level of data preemptively, right? That's not to say that's the exact amount you're going to pay, because despite legislation, things are still pretty opaque out there. Or do you not use insurance at all? And you say, like, hey, look, the service I need is small. Maybe it's an MRI. Maybe there's a local place that has a $500 cash payment and I don't even need to use my insurance because they're going to require prior auth and they're going to sit on it for a while and I'm going to be in pain for 2 or 3 weeks and I can't even get the scan at all. I'd rather just pay $500 and get it done that same day and just do away with my insurance. So the fact that that's an option, I think more people are becoming aware of it. I think it's an amazing trend because honestly, it does remove so many middlemen, right? Like, if you come in or someone comes into your practice and they're like, I'm self-pay, you're like, got it. Like, I know exactly what I'm going to charge you. I know that if you have a credit or debit card or whatever you use, I'm going to get paid that same day and it's clean and easy. And guess how many people were involved in that transaction? Credit card processors aside, right? It was A to B. It was very, very direct. It's like transactional fees, like minor, right? Like, you got paid quick and timely and at the rate you decided. And so more people need to start asking that question. And personally, honestly, I am going to start being a member of a cost sharing community myself because I have a direct primary care doctor. My kids are being assigned into one. I'm going to encourage my wife to find one. And then we will basically be self-pay and we'll have a level of protection, but it will not be insurance. It'll be something that I think is superior to that. So, I mean, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid over here as well. And, you know, being knowledgeable is what's going to save my family $1,000 a month, right? By not having that insurance premium, but still having phenomenal, you know, concierge level health care, right, to go along with what we are paying, which is just to be in a cost-sharing community. So there's so many different ways to slice it, but I would say the insurance plan is not the one and only place to look. Ask around, ask some cash prices. If you have to use your insurance, go in network. That's the smartest thing for you. But if it's a small service, you know, you can choose to finance it however you wish.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, it's really off based off the concept of choice. Many different doctors, many different services that are out there. And it's actually something that I will actually come in contact with when someone calls me up and says, hey, I want to work with you. And there was a lot to unpack with what you just shared. Number one, even just like the concept of just understanding what the cost is, right? I know that when I go through insurance and I call a doctor's office and I'm like, well, how much is this going to cost? And they say, well, it's going to depend on what your insurance says. well, all of a sudden, I don't even know what the price is if I have to pay or what I'm going to pay. So that itself already creates that air of uncertainty and challenging. No one likes to be in a position where they don't really quite know what's going on, especially when it comes to what they're going to be held on liable for. The second part is, yeah, I really appreciate the when you either you go out of network, you go cash pay, you know exactly what you're paying for. So then you can truly decide, you can truly make that choice of being able to say, am I going to pursue this? Is this $200 visit truly worth the $200 that I'm going to be going into? In some cases, absolutely. In other cases, no, right? But we have that choice. We have that opportunity to truly be informed, to be able to say, I'm going to go ahead and pursue this. And in regards to choice, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about the work that you do, but open enrollment, right, is around the corner. It's a time where people are going to have to reevaluate their health insurance policies, either because they have a huge life event, or it's just, okay, now we're at a different point of our life and we just need to start making those changes. And I just know for us, it's like things are certainly going to change as our family starts to grow. So there's a lot of questions that we have to ask ourselves to help us make those decisions a little bit better. But for, as a broker itself, or even, and also just as a consumer of healthcare, what are some questions that the listeners should be asking themselves to help them better understand, one, their benefits, but then also number two, how can they get themselves better prepared to make the decisions in regards to, okay, we need in our family to make this all happen in regards to their benefits?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I mean, it's just, it comes to so many different, you know, aspects of thinking and you know, decision-making, obviously, but you know what, each individual, if someone's buying a plan directly for their family, right? Like your situation, my situation, right? A swath of people are in that scenario where they always have to decide come November, December, what they want to enroll in, right? Or not enroll in, or, you know, use a different means of financing. But it always comes down to that personal choice. If it's the consumer buying directly, it's how much of a consumer am I, right? In terms of utilizing healthcare, am I a low cost utilizer? Do I go to the doctor maybe once a year, you know, for a checkup, or maybe when I'm incidentally sick, right? Is it something like a you know, respiratory tract infection? I mean, like that's, you know, common for me is like once a year or once every 2 years, I'll get a cold, right? Like that's my MO. And so I'm a low utilizer and I know that that's my pattern. So what I do and what everybody I think should do is make that decision with a little bit of, you know, data behind it, like what you can presuppose is going to happen to you in a given year based on history, right? Am I a low utilizer or a high utilizer? If I'm a low utilizer, what I'm going to want to do is saying how little insurance or how little coverage do I need, right? And then what am I going to get for that in return? So fundamentally, you only want to buy insurance for that which you can't afford to pay for yourself. Like that is the basics of insurance, right? Like no one, you know, people are driving around with a $0 car deductible only if they get in wrecks all the time, right? Like most people are like, no, I have a $500 or $1,000 or $1,500, like whatever that, you know, deductible may be to meet because they know their driving habits. Same thing with health, right? If I'm a low utilizer, that's why I'm okay to do cost sharing because I know I'm okay to be involved, right? I've found good medical homes. I'm going to minimize the amount of money that I pay every month on a guaranteed basis. And I'm going to roll the dice a little bit on the out-of-pocket side and say like, well, what is this plan going to potentially cover for me? At maximum, I'm okay with coming out of pocket, you know, what I need to. So people need to make that decision for themselves. And you also just, you want to buy as little insurance as possible, as little as you can afford to. Some people, they're going to be in the position where they have a very expensive, costly chronic condition, right? And they have a maybe a high cost medication. They go to the specialist all the time. You know, those folks are well suited to buy a high insurance, you know, a high premium insurance plan or policy, and to minimize their out-of-pocket because they know they're going to use the heck out of it, right? And rightfully so, and they should. Most people just, I don't think, make that decision intentionally. On the employer group side, it gets even more sticky because you have maybe a couple of people or one person making a decision for however many bodies they're in charge of downstream. And so it can become exceedingly complex to try to serve a population of that sort and taking into consideration individuals, right? But that's, you know, if you are buying a policy directly, you can think about it by way of utilization and prior history and what can I afford and what are the options now and what's my potential subsidy going to be and what's the network, right? Do I care about it or not, right? Do I just want the cheapest insurance because I never use it? and the smallest network, like maybe that suits you. But those are the kinds of things that one might need to think on. People that have HR or CFO hats or owner hats on, right, in the audience are listening, they would do well to maybe survey the staff, right, and ask some questions that, you know, it's something I've enabled for my clients, right? It's like, well, ask questions like, do you want a doctor in the family style approach? Do you want same day appointments for primary care? Do you want waived copays, right? Like, these are all easy yeses, right? But what that would equate to is a health plan that's more innovative than what they have, that operates differently. But that truly, everybody wants something better than what they have when it comes to health insurance. They just don't know that it's an option at all or how to think differently about it. But at least individuals have that choice, right? Do I need an ACA-based plan? Do I need cost sharing? Is cost sharing going to tie to a non-faith-based entity or like a MediShare, right? That's Christian faith-based, you know? Is that for you? Is short-term medical potentially for you? Most people have to have something, like some level. Even very, very wealthy people, they would still understand, like, it makes sense for me to pay a small amount for maybe a minor amount of coverage that's going to cover something enormous that is going to hit me in later life. So there's always on the continuum, like, you know, risk and how much you pay in premium and how much you're willing to shoulder. But people just should use their own history as the best basis upon which to make that decision. And then take a look at all the numbers and see what fits best. I mean, it's an exciting time to be able to choose what the next year is going to look like, you know, maybe try something for a year and see how it works. I mean, that's what we're going to do, frankly, is like, if it's too much work for us and our costs end up being more out of pocket than we anticipate, then we're going to go back to something more traditional. But it'd be real hard for us to lose $1,000 a month bet. Like, something bad would have to happen, and knock on wood, you know, hopefully we're going to try to stay ahead and to stay in the health bucket, you know, if we can.
Absolutely. So, get the insurance for what you can afford, but then also based off of what you can afford in regards to paying that premium and looking at your health and trying to project a little bit. And I really appreciate that. So, for the consumers out there, you have folks, HR professionals, your CFO, like the people who actually handle your benefit for your company, you can discuss with them to be able to say, like, what does it look like? And what's really cool, HR professionals, CFOs, we have Nico here who also can help with you and also Bro as well for listening in regards to just trying to figure out what those customized health plans are like. So Nico, tell us a little bit more about like what you guys do over there at your company and tell us a little bit more about like what those customized health plans could look like.
Yeah, sure. So it's been an interesting journey and there's, you know, a lot of moving parts and connections to be made. But fundamentally, you know, what I had done and have done and continue to work on is to build a product portfolio and to say, who are the vendors with whom I want to work, right? In terms of the network, there are, you know, a bunch of different options. You know, Cigna is a national one, like that's an easy one. But then there's also 72, 73 high performance direct contract networks that can be the base foundation of access for the you know, group, the employer group. And then there's not having a network at all, right? And so that would mix in, you know, direct and cash payments. And there's levels of advocacy and balance bill defense that have to be built into the product. But essentially what I did was to create the plan designs, to assemble the vendors, you know, who is processing the claims, who is the network choice, right? Who is providing the pharmacy benefits? What are the definitions of the plan? And I had some help. Obviously, I actually retained Health Rosetta to help me build plans because they have well-versed experience in that area. So I do lean on them for that support. But every single plan is high performance, right? It's very transparent. So people know where their dollars are going. They are all what's called level funded health plans, which essentially it says, if you're healthy enough to qualify for these kinds of plans as a population, you can save money relative to the other standard insurance options that you've been seeing all the time. Some of the national faction of carriers do provide level funded plans, but they're on that sliding scale of how much data do you get? You know, how much control do you have? Can you manipulate the formulary to cover medications that line up with your company mission, with your goals, right? There have been lawsuits about, you know, organizations having to have certain services covered, you know, that go fundamentally against their beliefs. So, you know, you've seen these kinds of things in the market, but every single plan that I build through COHP, it's transparent, it's high performance, it has really good vendors selected that are mission aligned. even you know, the fact that I don't really work with PE backed entities very much, you know, again, I'm trying to remove middle layers and cost as much as I possibly can. There's an aspect of that, but essentially it's a product just like a Blue Cross or United or an Aetna, right? I would get a case from an RFP or from a broker, excuse me, or a client directly, a prospect rather, and I would run it through the model, get underwriting, make a presentation to them, compare, here's what you have, here's what this other plan is. And sometimes actually it can work just the same as their, you know, air quote status quo plan, right? But maybe it just it ends up costing less because we actually apply underwriting and some different levers that you can pull, right? To impact cost in a positive way, like taking a case through underwriting, right? Like, you guys are really healthy. Like, why are you overpaying, right? And so sometimes it's easy and it's a slam dunk. But the process that you know, I've chosen to undertake with this is to evaluate and try to help as many people as I can. And that's why I want to work with brokers too, because a lot of people love their broker. It's a relationship-based, you know, connection. Most typically, it's local insurance brokers helping local companies, which I get, you know. But I also wanted to be able to help them because I know a lot of people are just without options, right? Or they don't know that there's other options. So the community and health plan model is really cool. You can get hyper-local with it, or you can have a national-based plan that looks and feels like something more traditional. And it's really up to the client and what their appetite is for innovation. And yeah, we want to like really save a lot of money. You can save 20, 40%, right? By adopting into a plan. When you're talking about a company that's spending $1 million a year, like, we can add $300,000 to your bottom line, right? You can give everybody a raise. I was talking to a colleague yesterday on the phone. He's like, I heard this story about this company taking everybody on a trip and they had like 80 employees and they funded it with their savings from their health plan. I was like, well, that's, you know, the money is theirs to keep. And that's the wonderful thing. Just they just need to work with people that know how to unlock those dollars, right? While still serving the staff.
Very cool. I think that's a very cool story. A lot of times we don't get an opportunity to learn or hear a lot about the amazing savings that people can have when going through the right routes. And like an example, when people come out to see out here in California and they're paying their out-of-pocket rate, they're like, oh my gosh, this sounds a lot expensive. But what's interesting is that even for me, what I found, the patients I work with, they don't need to see me 3 times a week for 12 weeks. They might need actually more so, you know, 3 to 4 visits over a span of time. And what one, it saves them money from just like an out-of-pocket perspective. They're not paying that like high volume, but also number two, it saves them the time that it takes from really cutting down on having to come in and see me on a regular basis and getting either the same outcome or a better outcome in less time with us. So I really appreciate you sharing this all. And thank you so much for your time explaining the concept of benefits. It's like this amorphous thing where even myself, we're not 100% clear. And so for to have someone like you to break that down a little bit more, getting a better understanding of the industry. And again, the more informed people can be, the better choices they can make. So for the listeners out there who are like, okay, want to talk to Nico a little bit more about our employees, like our employee plan, and make those changes. What are the best ways to get in touch with you?
Sure. Yeah. So I am all over that venerable platform, LinkedIn. I love it. So perhaps in the show notes, maybe there's a link, but I know that we're connected. So pretty easy, you know, to connect and reach out on LinkedIn because I do have the two organizations, and one's where I'm a retail broker. That's a very closely held relationship with the client. The other one's where I work with a broker that's introduced to me by a client or a broker that's listening, that's interested in high performance health plans and offering them to their groups. But LinkedIn's a nice way to begin. You know, I have a couple of email addresses as well. There's Nico, N-I-K-O, at prosperitybenefits.com, which is my retail-based brokerage, which mostly I serve local-based employers, right? Well, I live in Savannah, Georgia, by the way, so across the country. But that said, the other one is on the community-owned health plan side. That's Nico, N-I-K-O, at COHP.info. And so two ways to reach me on the email, and then one via LinkedIn. And then if it makes sense to dive in, we will, and I'd love to help.
Awesome. Extremely informative, Nico. Thank you so much for your time. And listeners, all that contact information will be found in the show notes. It's good to see you, Nico.
Awesome, Ashley. Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.